there and welcome to our show, The Shit No One Tells You About Writing. I'm best-selling author Bianca Murray, and I'm joined by Cece Lira of Wendy Sherman Associates and Carly Waters of PS Literary. Hi everyone, I'm really excited about today's special guest who scared the crap out of me as she hopped on because I was looking at another screen, and I feel like this is an appropriate way for her and I to have met considering the books she writes. She is a New York Times bestselling and award-winning author. Her books have been published in over 30 languages and have been voted best of the year or top picks by The Today Show, Good Morning America, Entertainment Weekly, and others. She lives on the west coast of Florida with her family. It's my pleasure to welcome Lisa Unger. Lisa, welcome to the show.
Well, Bianca, thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
You know, I get a lot of hiccups, so I feel like you and I need to hang around each other a lot because getting scared takes the hiccups away.
Exactly. Whenever you're having like a hiccup jag, just schedule an interview and I'll hop on while you're busy with something else.
I'm going to have you on speed dial. Okay, so for everybody who's not watching on the YouTube channel, I'm holding up the book we're discussing today. Served Him Right. Dun, dun, dun. We're going to link to it on our bookshop.org affiliate page. If you get the book there, you support an independent bookstore and the podcast at the same time. So, Lisa, you have had a phenomenal career. I mean, is this your 23rd book? Have I lost track?
It is.
Have you lost track?
I sometimes do lose track, but I know that it's my 23rd because I've turned in my 24th and I'm writing my 25th book right now. So yeah, my first novel published in 2002, you know, back in the Stone Ages. And I've been pretty much doing a book a year since then, in addition to, you know, novellas and short fiction and some nonfiction essays and such. So yeah, you know, head down, nose to the keyboard for like 25 years. Yeah. For sure.
I mean, that fascinates me. It's longevity in an industry that does not make longevity easy. Agents go this way. Editors go this way. Suddenly, the whole industry wants this. Then suddenly, this is no longer fashionable. Then they want this. Then they want you to write in your lane. Then they want you to stay out of your lane. So whenever I come across a writer such as you, I really want to pick your brain about advice in terms of the longevity. Is it really just rolling with the punches? Is it being versatile? What's your advice for that?
Yeah, I mean, it's such a great question because I think it's funny, like when I travel all the time and I'm always at conferences, and I think there's always like this perception of people, you know, they sprung from the head of Zeus in full armor, right? You know, and they're like people who are luminaries or people who are award winners or whatever, you kind of only see them in that moment. And I think most people are, or a lot of people, I should say, are not necessarily honest about what a road it is, like what a journey it is. And I mean, in my case, you know, I started writing my first novel when I was 19 years old. I didn't publish that novel until I was 29. But then once I started writing, I have, as I mentioned, written a book a year. And the industry has, I mean, if you think about it, 2002, at that stage, at that time, there wasn't any social media.
Right.
We didn't even have smartphones.
Yeah.
At that point in time. So it was a different game altogether. So the industry, and I've been in the industry since I was 22 years old. I started in publishing. That was my first job. So I have seen the industry just change dramatically, you know, in terms of formats. Obviously the ebook came along and changed publishing. The audiobook is right now having a huge moment. Mass market has just completely gone away. It's gone now from most publishing programs, which is crazy to me, you know, because it was always like such a backbone of the industry. And so I've seen the industry change a lot, and trends, of course, change and all of that. But, you know, what I will say is what doesn't change is that people still read. People still want stories, like in whatever format they're getting them at this time. And I don't think that changes because it's the human impulse to narrate, you know, to embody character, to narrate, to create story. It's the human impulse to hear and to read those stories and to learn about life, not necessarily to escape life, although certainly, yes, sometimes that. So for me, the secret has always been that what I care about every day when I wake up is I care about what I do on the page. Every day I believe that I can be a better writer than I was yesterday. And I firmly believe that because it's the only thing that has driven me through my career. So of course, you know, I actually wrote about this for Publishers Weekly that, you know, there's, you know, this long career. And of course there are these dizzying highs and these crushing lows, you know, a beloved agent passed away, a beloved editor left, like all of the things that can happen in your career have happened to me. And yet every day I get up and I write. And the same thing is true on the amazing days, right? The days where you get a great review or you win an award or you're nominated for an award. It's the same. I sit down and I write. So it reminds me of that old, like the Zen Buddhist adage, which is like, what do you do before enlightenment? You know, chop wood, carry water. What do you do after enlightenment? You know, chop wood, carry water. So what do you do on the worst day? Hopefully you write. What do you do on the best day? You better sit down and write. And that's what sustained me, I think, through my career.
Jeez, what do you do before? You make shit up. And what do you do afterwards? You make shit up. Right? I'm going to frame that somewhere. Something you said was something that I wanted to ask, because there's pros and cons to this, is one, you have hugely loyal fans. And I know this because every time I go on a cruise or if I go to resort somewhere where there's a lot of people crowded together reading, I will always check what they're reading. And your books are everywhere. So it shows, and it's not just the latest one, it's a whole bunch of them, which shows a really loyal, faithful following. And something that I've noticed about you just from seeing you on social media is that you're a really good literary citizen. Mm. You highlight other writers, you show up for other writers. You know, you do a lot of conferences, etc. And readers nowadays through socials want to have a kind of parasocial relationship with you, right? Mm-hmm. They want to ask you questions. Why did you do this on this page? Why did you do this on this page? And of course, you want to engage with your readers, but there comes a point at which, especially your level, you cannot be doing that and still writing. So yeah. How do you balance that authentic engagement with a community who wants to engage with you with getting the next book out, which is also what they want?
Yeah, it's a really interesting balancing act. And, you know, especially for somebody who's been doing this work as long as I have, you know, it's relatively new. Like I remember a time before social, there was a time where there wasn't really any social media. And certainly it wasn't I think only in the last couple of years has it become like this basically fire hose of distraction and need and all of it, right? Like it's only recently become that from my perspective, right? So, I mean, I have really tried because I consider it, you know, and I'll just be really honest. Like, first of all, I consider it the enemy of creativity, really, really. And yet it's also a way to connect with other authors, booksellers, readers, and that's important as well, right? And so it's an inauthentic platform, but I've worked to try to find a way to be authentic within that platform. But truly, no, it's not possible to engage personally with every single person who wants to engage with you. But the way I feel about it is that, you know, I write a book, I spend a year writing a book, and I pour all of myself into it. Right. And it's my book. It's everything that I did that year. It's like what I thought about the most. It's the pinnacle of my ability. It's the best that I can do at the time of its writing. And then I put it out into the world. Right. And then it becomes the reader's book. So that's where my relationship is with my reader. And I have been writing for a long time. I have people, and even though my books are all a little bit different, they're definitely layered and, you know, not the same thing time after time. So I feel very, really grateful that the people who have been reading me all along, you know, come along for the ride. But like, that's my true engagement with my reader. I've provided you with this book and you take it and you read it. And when you read it, it becomes yours. You bring yourself to the book and it becomes something different, something utterly different from what I created is what it is in your hands. And so I feel like that's it's the most important way that I engage with my readers. I do also engage in real time in social media. I have help. You know, all content comes from me. All content flows from me. I've been really careful that there's no one else creating content. Somebody else might post, all that stuff. And also I try to stay really strict in my schedule. And this is something that I got from Cal Newport. He wrote a book called Deep Work. I don't know if you've ever read it. I think it's an important book. I think every writer should read it. But you know, the work of writing, that is my deep work. The creation of my novels and my stories, that is my deep work. My marketing and engagement work, that is my shallow work, right? According to Cal Newport. So the deep work always comes first. My golden creative hours are the morning, 5 a.m. to noon. I try to honor that as much as I can. That's where I'm closest to my dream brain. That's where, you know, there's a little pocket of time before the sun comes up where nobody else is interested in you and what you're doing. And I try to really stay there and then bring myself to the other work of marketing and engagement in the afternoon. That's what I try to do.
I love that. I love that process. And something you said earlier about layering your work and people who read your work find that layering. I'm going to read two small excerpts just for our readers to show what, you know, Lisa means here. So it says, I've seen enough gore in my life and career that I could be one of those who resorts to gallows humor to cope. It still gets me every time. I know too much about the human body and how it comes apart, breaks down, comes undone. Mainly these days, I see overdose. Fentanyl is a scourge, especially in semi-rural communities like this. 1,000 people last year died in this county alone. All kinds of people. Last month, a wealthy doctor. The month before that, a waitress after a night out with her friends. Two college students found in the library. They thought, according to friends, that what they were taking was Adderall. Died over their textbooks. There have been car accidents, suicides, assaults, domestic violence. But in my 5 years on the Little Valley PD, this is only my fourth murder. The three others were open and shut. Domestic violence turned deadly. That's the truth of it. Overdoses and men killing women who they supposedly love, like the flower he hadn't meant to pick or the bug he hadn't meant to stop. Why, I heard one man wail, why did you make me do it? Whew, the rage, and I got goosebumps there, and then I was filled with so much rage, Lisa.
I gotta own it. There's a lot of rage in that book, for sure.
I'm loving the rage, and I know exactly where it's coming from. And I always say, put the rage on the page. That's where
Absolutely.
It needs to be.
That's the best place for it.
Yeah. Wow. And there's all a bunch of places for it, but on the page helps. So here as well, there's another one. It goes, here we go. Our relationship to the natural world, to plants and trees, to the whole big spinning orb is complicated. It's a twist, a dance, a struggle. Nature nourishes us, an endlessly giving mother, but unsheltered exposure to her whims and mood can end your life. The plants we use to heal ourselves in different doses become toxic. The substances we use for recreation can stop our hearts, irreparably addle our minds, invade our cells, and change our behavior. Consider tobacco, one of the most dangerous plants on earth, killing nearly 500,000 people a year. And yet some of us pick it up willingly and daily suck that poison into our lungs because of the way it makes us feel. And the poppy, the beauteous red flower of misery and death. Untold millions have died from the drugs concocted from her compounds, drawn over and over again to the promise of that state of euphoria, the blessed relief from the pain of living. There's no such thing as an unnatural death. Nature has devised a million ways for us to die, even if it's by way of human nature. There are some that believe humans have dominion over the earth, but it's not so. As we trample and destroy her, so does she wreak her havoc upon us. Eventually, she will eradicate us like the virus we have proven ourselves to be. So, I mean, you pick up this book and you're expecting a murder mystery. Someone's going to die, man. Which I love. But then you get these moments where you read that and it just resonates and it's so true and it gets you thinking about so much else. So there's so much depth and layering in between the murder and the mystery element of that.
Thank you.
Does that come from years of writing? Was your earlier work like this as well, or have you leaned into it later?
I think so. I mean, I definitely see a thread. I mean, for me, it's always every book, it begins and ends with character voice. Everything begins with character for me. And then those characters reveal themselves to me on the page very much the way my reader will learn about them later. I have that very like sort of authentic relationship to the page and to my characters where like I write for the same reason that I read, you know, because I want to know what's going to happen to these people who are living in my head. And, you know, and I think that I've always been, as a reader, you have always been like this literary omnivore as a kid. You know, my mom is a librarian, my dad is an engineer, and they're both big readers. And every place we lived, it was like big bookshelves and there was no censorship, right? For me, I could read, if I could read it, if I could reach it, I could read it. And so I kind of grew up with this, you know, and we traveled all over the world. So I was always like the new kid. I was always like the odd person out, right? So I've had this, but I always had a book, you know, and a notebook, right? So that was always like a home for me. And so I read everything. I mean, I read things that were wildly inappropriate for my age. I just read everything like from the classics to science fiction to fantasy to popular fiction like V.C. Andrews and Sidney Sheldon and Stephen King. And so I've always had this really like large just appetite for fiction. And I don't discriminate. Like, to me, like a literary novel, you know, like Jane Eyre, something that stays with me my entire life, you know, is comparable to something I read, you know, from Robert Heinlein, science fiction, like back in the 80s or whatever. And it's like, it doesn't matter to me. Like, so these stories have formed me, of course, as a writer. So this deep sort of...
You guys know I am all about quality over quantity. I've worked on books about fashion and making the most of your wardrobe, so I feel pretty strongly about making my clothes work for me. They have to be versatile and high quality with durable fabrics that feel elevated. And that's honestly why I love Quince. They make high quality wardrobe staples from premium fabrics like 100% European linen, 100% silk, and organic cotton poplin. I've been living in their heather gray and camel Mongolian cashmere sweaters. They're light enough for layering as the seasons change, but still feel incredibly luxe. I'm new to their jewelry, but wear their gold hoops daily. Quince works directly with ethical factories to cut out the middlemen so you aren't paying for brand markups. Their pieces are built to hold up season after season, from the stitching to the fit. Stop waiting to build the wardrobe you actually want. You don't need a closet full of options. You need pieces that work. Right now, go to quince.com/tsnotya for free shipping and 365-day returns. That's a full year to wear and love it. And you will. Now available in Canada, too. Go to quince.com/tsnotya for free shipping and 365-day returns. Quince.com/tsnotyah.
You know, connection to character. And then also, you know, these things that have come on, that evolve on the page, either as their perspective or as the, you know, whatever from a third person perspective, like it's very organic. I never sit down to write that. I didn't sit down to write a book about Anna Blacksmith and her relationship with men and her relationship to plants and how layered and complicated that is. I didn't sit down to write that book. I heard her voice and what evolved in that story evolved on the page. So it's all very organic, but I think you'd see it if you read Angel Fire, which was my first book that published in 2002. And I started it when I was 19, when I was still in college. I think you would still find a lot of those layers and that it's all, you know, as my learning, I mean, obviously I was 19 this year, I'm, you know, going to be 56. So I've been writing all that time. So hopefully I'm a better writer than I was when I was 19. I certainly hope so. I have tried. But I think you'll see a thread that runs through that. It's not just, I mean, I didn't choose thriller. Thriller kind of chose me. I just have this really dark imagination. And it's where I metabolize darkness, the darkness that I perceive in the world. And so I think that's part of it as well. But part of it is just, you know, things are dark, you know, they're also light. They're also beautiful, but there's a darkness. And that's what I'm the most curious about. So I think that's the long answer or the short answer.
I love that answer. I mean, we live in this constant duality.
Yes.
We're not going to have time for much more, but something that I really wanted to get into was you do multiple first person POVs so well.
Oh, thank you.
You know, so often you read a book and I mean, how many POV characters have we got you? It's like 7 or 8.
Right? Timothy, Anna, Vera, Coraline, Timothy, so there's the perspective from Agnes, which is like a six,
past,
seven.
Yeah.
Yeah. Six, yeah. Seven.
Six or seven, right? And yeah. Most of them are in the present day timeline. We've got Agnes, that takes us into the past. But right. They're written in like first person POVs. And the problem that often happens here is that if you just pick up and you forget who the person was, you will be completely confused because you're like, okay, who the heck is this character? And people right. don't realize how much each of those first person POVs have to be so different according to that person's experience, their knowledge of the world, the kind of words they would use, their exactly. socio-demographic, their history. Right. So okay. how do you tackle that? Do you come up with that character first? Because like you say, character voice comes to you first
yeah.
and then you try and form them out. Do you use vision boards at all to keep them all separate or no?
No, I don't do anything like that. I mean, I write in a Word document. That's all I've ever done. I've never used any of these. Like, I think there's like really nice like software and stuff that you can get now. I couldn't write like that. I wouldn't even be able to figure it out. I write in, I don't have a vision board. I don't have like a whiteboard with scenes and things get moved around. No, nothing like that. For me, it's really, I really do just like authentically hear these voices and they're all really different to me. Like, in the writing of them, in the experience of them, they're all really different. You know, I've had people ask me, don't you get confused between this character and that character? And I'm like, I don't understand that question. Do you get confused between your sister and your mother and your friend? Like, they are different people to you, right? Like, oh, I like whatever. I mean, that is authentically how I experience it. So, I mean, obviously, you know, they're so vivid to me in my mind that hopefully they come that way on the page. And when I start hearing them, I talk a lot about like writing as an organic process. There's an ebb and a flow, right, to your day. It's like we all know what to do on the flow days. We write, we write. But on the ebb days, when you're just kind of like, you run into the stone wall of what's going to happen here? What's next? I don't know. Like you do whatever you do. You go to the gym, you throw the ball for the dog, bake a cake, whatever you do to kind of get yourself out of that headspace. And then you hear it. For me, it's like I hear it or I see it or there's a sentence and then I'm like, I'm back in, right? So that's kind of how it works for me. Like, so I don't like say, okay, here's Vera, here's Anna, here's Agnes. I need to accomplish this with the plot. So this character is going to do this and I need to do that with this character in that. None of that. Absolutely none of that. It's all organic. It's all from the inside out. I'm sure there's an easier way.
I've interviewed so many authors and I sound like you because what I've always said is that if I know what's going to happen in a story, I have no desire to write it. What's the point?
Exactly.
So I'm like you. A character sidles up to me like in a bar and like, psst, I've got something to tell you.
Yeah.
And I'm like, tell me. And I start writing it down to find out where the heck we're going to go. Right. And it feels to me almost like channeling them,
100%. Yeah.
It's like having a psychic experience. You channel someone and your job is just to faithfully represent this person's story. And that's how it feels to me as well.
100%. And I will say too that there are some moments when, research, obviously there's a lot of moments where research needs to be done. Your research doesn't necessarily need to find its way into your book, but you need to do it. A lot more than you would imagine to write authentically about anything, to write like one authentic sentence. You need to have done like a couple months of research. And this is something that's true for my book that will come out in 2027, where I had a character who just kind of showed up, was getting to know her, realized that she was in a wheelchair. And so I had to address my own, ignorance in that area. And so I started doing some reading and then I reached out to two people who, teach writers how to write about things that are not their lived experience to get that really right for her, that, that show her that character and, somebody else who might be in a wheelchair, the respect that right. Like, I don't have this lived experience. And so I'm going to do months of research trying to understand that experience so that I can portray it with love and authenticity on the page. So there is that piece to it as well, but it begins with the voice. Like I would never say, oh, I'm going to write about a character with a disability. I'm going to write about a person with, like, that would never happen. That would never happen. I don't think in that way about story.
Yeah. The character will come to you first and go, oh, by the way, I'm a wheelchair user. I've had characters come up to me and be like, oh, by the way, I have a parrot. He sings the King's greatest hits. I'm like, shit, well, yeah. I'm going to have to learn some Elvis.
And parrots, for that matter.
Yeah, I've never had birds either, so I had to learn about African grey parrots. So, yeah, it's really interesting.
But that's part of the joy, right? Like, that's part
it
of
is.
The joy. For me, it is. Discovery, inhabiting character, bringing people authentically to the page, treating people with respect so that when other people read, maybe even though it's fiction and it's thriller, you're getting a little bit of a window into somebody else's world.
Which is how empathy is created. We absolutely are creators correct. Of empathy because
yes, absolutely, you yes.
cannot read a book and step into a character and feel what they're feeling and go on that journey without developing some degree of empathy, which the world needs now more than ever.
Yeah,
so we will end on that note. Lisa, thank you so much for joining us. I'm holding up the book again.
Thank you.
Served Him Right. It's going on our bookshop.org affiliate page and it'll be out soon. And we wish you all the best with it, Lisa. Thank you for joining us.
Bianca, thank you so much. It's a pleasure talking to you.
Cece Lira is a literary agent at Wendy Sherman Associates. If you'd like to query Cece, please refer to the submission guidelines at www.wsherman.com. Carly Waters is a literary agent at PS Literary Agency, but her work on this podcast is not affiliated with the agency, and the views expressed by Carly on this podcast are solely that of her as a podcast co-host and do not necessarily reflect the views, opinions, policies, or position of PS Literary Agency.